All right.
All right. Listen to that.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy Hybrid Meeting. It's online. It's also, we are in person for the first time in more than 2 years. And for some of our members, this is their first time to be in person in a hearing. That's why, hence, we have some treats from first-time Representative Greenman. So thank you so much for bringing the treats. Members, I call this meeting on Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy to order. If you are online, please make sure that your mic is muted, and I see all the members are seated. This remote and hybrid hearing is being conducted to pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed online at the House Info webcast, and thank you so much for allowing us to do this process. And we're testing it, and it's working. With that, I would like to ask the Committee Legislative Assistant to now take the role.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor present. Vice Chair Zhang.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang present. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton present. Baker.
Baker present.
Baker present. Dabney.
Dabney present.
Dabney present. Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Greenman.
Greenman present.
Greenman present. Haley.
Haley present.
Haley present. Juergens.
Juergens present.
Juergens present. Cagle.
Cagle present.
Cagle present. Katiza Watun.
Katiza Watun present.
Katiza Watun present. Olson.
Present.
Olson present. And Jean.
Present. Jean present.
Chair Noor, we have a quorum.
Members, there's a quorum present. With that, Lead Hamilton, do you want to move the approval for minutes from March 16, 2022?
Yes, thank you. So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. Lead Hamilton moves the approval of minutes of March 16, 2022. Any discussions? See none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? See none. The minutes are approved. With that, members, we have a couple of bills. The first bill is House File 3733, and I'm going to be presenting it, now transferring the chairmanship to Jay Jong, the Vice Chair. You can bring your son.
All new to me.
Just the label with the bill, right?
Yep.
Chair Noor, would you like to make a motion to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 3733 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. With that, Mr. Chair, I wanted to present House File 3733, which establishes a new program that is based on community wealth building grant program. Mr. Chair, members, as you have seen and aware of, one of our challenge that we're trying to solve here is when you have a shared ownership, when you have a co-ops, when you have groups that want to build wealth together, there's no system set up in our place so they can take advantage of that resources. So this bill, Mr. Chair and members, creates that opportunity by creating a program at the department and allow us to do the work that is necessary for economic development. It's about shared values and shared prosperity, and building wealth requires us to be more flexible and to be able to do the work that is necessary. Mr. Chair, I have two testifiers here today who will walk us through that process. I would like you to invite the testifiers who are with me today here. Thanks.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Elena Gorder. I am with the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers, and I'm the president and CEO. Chair Zhang, members of the committee. I just wanted to start out with telling you a bit about what MCCD is. So we are a 50-member consortium of nonprofit organizations serving the Twin Cities metro area. We are also a certified community development financial institution providing small business development and technical assistance services to primarily immigrant, Black, Indigenous, people of color, businesses, women, as well low-wealth folks in the Twin Cities. Our mission is really to work in partnership with one another to leverage resources so collectively we can generate more wealth, strengthen the local economy, promote affordable housing, again, throughout the Twin Cities. However, we can only achieve this by addressing the inequities that have shaped housing and economic development policies at every level of the government and that have prevented those same communities from achieving housing stability, accessing capital, and opportunities to build wealth. One of the ways that we're working to meet our mission is for more resources to support shared ownership models. Earlier this year, we launched a shared ownership fund to provide low-cost financing for the development, acquisition, and conversion of employee-owned companies, cooperatives, and commercial land trusts. We're also leading efforts around the state with other organizations for state funding to really elevate this work. So the Community Wealth Building Program, House File 3733, would help entrepreneurs and business owners in these communities be able to access resources for these business models. Many entrepreneurs across the state, as you know, face barriers to financing and traditional business opportunities. And this is why shared ownership is a solution for that. So some fun facts. There was a handout, hopefully, that you picked up at the beginning as to why shared ownership. So if 30% of all U.S. businesses were owned by their employees, the median wealth of Black families would go from $24,000 to $106,000. And the bottom 20% of households' wealth would quadruple. In Minnesota, 52,000 businesses are owned by baby boomers in the state. 85% of those businesses have no succession plan, and 15% will go to family, the rest unknown. That could really shake this state's economy. That's 599,000 Minnesotan jobs. And so in Minnesota and throughout the country, people are using converting these privately owned businesses to employee ownership as just one strategy. And this bill would help to support that. For commercial land trusts, we see that this model keeps businesses rooted locally. It is also a fiscally responsible model in that a one-time investment in private, public, and philanthropic funding stays with that property so that it remains affordable in perpetuity. So it's a good, sound fiscal investment. So in summary, financial resources through the Community Wealth Building Grant Program have the potential to change the landscape of small businesses in Minnesota, and even more importantly, to close the racial wealth gap. Thank you, Chair Noor, for carrying this bill and for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Garner, for your testimony. Up next, I have Makaya Griffin. If you could identify yourself for the record and proceed, please.
Chair Zhang, members of the committee, my name is Makaya Griffin, and I am the executive director of Rondo Community Land Trust. Rondo Community Land Trust is located in the Rondo neighborhood. However, we serve as a community land trust for all of St. Paul and Ramsey County. Rondo Community Land Trust was founded in 1993, and its mission is to strengthen and preserve communities by providing and advocating for permanently affordable, sustainable housing for families and individuals with low to moderate incomes, to promote the land trust shared equity model as a method of preserving affordable housing, economic growth, and neighborhood stabilization, and to support and celebrate cultural diversity by providing affordable business opportunities to increase community economic wealth, property values, and jobs. One of the most pressing issues in the community is how small BIPOC-owned businesses can afford commercial space when rapidly rising rents and speculative real estate development threatens to displace them. It is unsettling to those of us who care about ensuring local businesses, business owners, are not displaced after they have made significant investments into the communities that they serve. Based on the concepts underlying the land trust model, Rondo CLT is creating a new model for long-term affordable commercial space. Golden Time is a legacy business in the Rondo community located on Selby Avenue. It's operated for 21 years there. Golden Time is more than a beloved business. It's a place where community meets and gathers. It's also the epicenter and creator of the Selby Avenue Jazz Fest. In 2019, Rondo Community Land Trust, along with partner Trellis Company, developed two mixed-use commercial developments, the Selby Milton Victoria Project. These buildings provide 9,300 square feet of commercial, long-term affordable commercial space, and also 34 units of affordable senior rental. These buildings provide long-term affordable commercial space for small local minority-owned businesses. And again, along with those wonderful 34 units of senior housing, all of these will remain affordable into perpetuity. The funding and technical assistance provided in House File 3733 would help Rondo Community Land Trust expand our work and preserve and create permanently affordable commercial spaces for minority-owned businesses, not only in the Rondo community, but also in St. Paul and throughout suburban Ramsey County. Thank you, Chair Knorr, for carrying this bill and for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin, and I believe we have one more testifier, Ms. Lisa Olson, via Zoom. If you could come on Zoom and identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, my name is Lisa Olson. I'm Chair Knorr and members of the committee. Lisa Olson. I'm one of the co-owners of the Hub Bike Co-op located in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The Hub Bicycle Co-op was founded in 2002. We've been around for 20 years. We are a cooperatively owned bicycle shop in downtown Longfellow neighborhood of Minneapolis. The shop's been open for 20 years, and we're very involved in our community. We teach community education classes, both with Minneapolis Community Ed. We go into the community and do repair outreach. We also teach maintenance classes to the public. We have space for folks to work on their own bikes in our shop. We're based on shared knowledge alternative transportation, bicycles, which is economically friendly and good for the environment, promotes an active lifestyle. And if it were not for the cooperatively owned, worker-owner structure of the company, I think a lot of my coworkers and co-owners and I probably would not have the opportunity to be a part owner of a business. It's really exciting to be a small business owner, getting into the bicycle industry about 7 years ago and learning about business operations and ownership and utilizing my co-owners' shared knowledge, sharing the financial responsibility, and also the profit sharing with a dividend at the end of each fiscal year is something that I can't imagine being able to do without a group of people. And in terms of it being able to change my life, it definitely gives me more pride in my community. I'm here today to support in support of House File 3733, because the more the state can do to support shared ownership models, the more we can do to build wealth for our community businesses and their owners across Minnesota. Small businesses help define our communities and support the overall strength of Minnesota's economy. Thank you all for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Olson, for your testimony. Mr. Chair, I believe these are all your testifiers. Is that correct?
Yes, Chair Zhong. So if there's any question, we'll be glad to respond to.
Representative Franke.
Thank you, Chair Zhong. Thank you, Chair Noor. I have some questions on how the funding comes around and goes around here. Now, it says here on line 3.11, the partner organization may charge a loan origination fee at no more than 1% of the loan value and may retain this origination fee. Is this the only money that the partner organization makes off of this, or do they also then get to keep the interest rate charged on the loan?
Well, let me allow my testifiers, who are the professionals on the field, to respond to that, but it's more than that. Go ahead.
I'm going to ask my policy director, Carrie Johnson, to help field some of these questions as well.
Ms. Johnson, please identify yourself for the record.
Absolutely. Carrie Johnson with MCCD. Chair Zhong, Representative Franke. So the bill is written to provide some funding so that the organizations that are providing this funding to shared ownership businesses can cover their loan servicing costs, their origination costs that go along with that, along with ongoing technical assistance. These are 5-year grant periods, and along with hopefully we get to the point where we can do marketing and outreach to get more businesses invested and interested in this business model.
Representative Franke.
Thank you, Chair Zhong. Thank you for that answer. I guess I'll try to be more specific here, Chair Noor, and to the testifiers. So in Section 2, it talks about the 5% for administration costs and monitoring. And to me, that looks like that goes to deed. Is that a correct statement?
That is correct.
Now, I'm wondering if this is hopefully I'm framing this in the right context. We have $15 million here from the general fund. Is that going out to the organizations and coming back in, and we're rebuilding this fund and keeping it moving forward instead of a one-time payment? So we're actually building a program that will sustain itself over life and hopefully grow to keep and continue to help these organizations to flourish, would be my question.
Chair Zhong, Representative Franke, thank you for that question. So the program is written as that 50% of the funds would be repaid back to deed and would be a revolving loan fund, and that there would be a base appropriation of $2 million every biennium to help preserve the fund. As I mentioned before, there are quite significant technical assistance costs. We hope to be able to market this program. As we said, MCCD's CEO said there are 52,000 baby boomer-owned businesses. Many of them don't know that this is an option for them, and so we would like to be able to market this program as well as an option. We think that if deed is holding these funds or has this as a state program, we will be able to see an increase in the number of businesses that are pursuing shared ownership models.
Representative Franke.
Thank you, Chair Zhong. So, Chair Noor and to the testifiers, if I'm understanding this correctly, we're making a $15 million initial investment, 50% comes back, and then on top of that, we're putting $2 million annually in the tails.
Correct. Johnson?
Chair Zhong, Representative Franke, that is correct.
Thank you, Chair Zhong. Thank you, Chair Noor and the testifiers. That's it.
Any more questions? All right, Chair Noor, would you like to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion. House File 3733 be laid over for possible inclusion, and I'll ask for your support on that.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know. Good.
All right, the next bill is House File 4244. Chair Moran?
Yes, so good afternoon. Good afternoon, Chair Noor and members. I want to thank you for this opportunity to come before you to present House File 4244.
Madam Chair, this is for informational hearing. It's a capital investment. We have only a few minutes. If you can proceed.
Okay. Irreducible Grace Foundation has worked with Youth of Color and their allies for over 10 years. This group provides trauma healing techniques and workshops to communities all across the state through youth-led workshops. The team members have experienced unemployment, homelessness, mental health concerns, and other barriers that affect their daily lives. The project that that they are proposing will provide a holistic structure of employment, housing, mental health support, and mentorship in one location through a site they wish to purchase. The ingredients needed for young Black individuals to be successful in our state. This site will provide over 75 jobs annually, 60 being youth positions, and this is how we create safe and healthy communities. We increase our tax base and we begin to eliminate the disparities that Minnesota is known for. Chair Noor, I do believe Dr. Fry is going to testify, and there may be another individual.
Dr. Fry, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Fry, the Irreducible Grace founder and executive director. As you all know, in our state level metrics, every positive quality of life metric, employment, housing, homeownership, education, and wealth, Blacks are experiencing the greatest racial disparity. Yet in every negative metric, homelessness, substance abuse, violence, mental health concerns, food instability, that same population is at the top of the charts. Irreducible Grace would like to combat these conflicting data points in the lives of Black youth and their family in the state of Minnesota. We need a holistic, long-term, culturally derived opportunities created in the community by the community. With House File 4098, Irreducible Grace will purchase a building in St. Paul that is currently used as a school to convert it to employment, housing, wellness, and a healing arts space. We are asking this capital investment funds to convert the site to host 60 young people for employment, 16 young residential leaders, and hundreds of participants to engage in mental wellness activities. We've asked Amos Cole, one of our members, to speak to the impact this site could have.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fry. The next person I see is Cole. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello. Thanks for having me. My name is Amos Cole. I am one of the IGF facilitators. Sorry, give me one sec here. The Black Youth Healing Arts Center would have been extremely helpful for me when I was in high school. This place reminds me of a Boys and Girls Club, but it has a purpose extremely dedicated towards healing young people of color. As a songwriter, the recording studio would have not only given me a safe space to be creative, it would have also provided me with the equipment my parents couldn't afford to make music. I would have had a much healthier outlet without having to question whether I was welcome in a space, nor would I have had to worry about overpriced studio time. This space would have provided an equal opportunity. It would also have given me a vital head start with connecting with other artists my age in my city to build relationships, collaborations, and healthy networks. My parents wouldn't have had to worry about where I was and who I was with if I had the Black Youth Healing Arts Center. Having a space like this is important for kids and young adults because it would finally allow like-minded artists to come together without putting up barriers or worrying about their differences. Because the work is revolved around healing, the best part is that they will also be able to share what they've made with their communities and spread awareness about mental health.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Cole, for your testimony. Chair Moran, discussion members. Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Chair Moran, on the bill itself, it talks about on lines 1.10. Well, first it starts about this is a one-time appropriation and available till the project is completed, and then it goes on to say, or abandoned. I don't think I've ever seen language like that before. Can you just speak to that? Why would the project be abandoned?
Chair Moran.
So, thank you, Chair Noor, and thank you, Representative Hamilton. I'm going to allow Dr. I think it would be a better question for Dr. Fry to respond to.
Dr. Fry.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and Representative Frankie.
That was Lee Hamilton, just to make
Lee Hamilton, sorry. Sorry. I am not sure why it says abandoned. We fully intend to go forth with this project. We may have to wait some time, but we fully intend to go forth with the project.
Lead Hamilton.
Well, could staff or somebody or anybody who put this together?
Ms. Jolene.
Chair and members, Anna Shalane, House Research. Yes, this is technical language because it was written for the Capital Investment Committee. It's very standard language for bonding requests. I think the analyst who drafted this bill just applied it, even though it's general funds, but it's technical language.
Lee Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Chair Moran.
To your closing remarks, Chair Moran, and we will move to the next bill.
Yes, thank you, Chair Noor. And Representative Hamilton, I too just agree that I did not see that catch or know that language was there. I do know that they have been in the community 10 years and they are full steam ahead. So I just want to say thank you, Chair Noor. What a great impact that such a site could have for those struggling to get over negative barriers from education, hunger, mental health, economic development, and workforce. This is a good investment for our state. So let's go upstream and let's do some good work. I ask for your support and thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Chair Moran. The next bill, Chair Moran, is House File 4098. That bill will be House File 4098 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. To your bill, Chair Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members again. House File 4098 is a bill about economic development, entrepreneurship, creating wealth, growth for Black women, their families, and the broader community. Mr. Chair and members, in the first 4 months of the pandemic, half of all Black workers in Minnesota were laid off and applied for unemployment benefits. That's roughly 1 in 3 Black workers that filed for unemployment benefits. For white workers, it was 25%. Black Women Wealth Alliance is the first Black woman-owned Pacific Public Benefit Corporation in Minnesota. They aim to cultivate strategies to create wealth and change lives. This organization serves as a social enterprise that focuses on improving the economic stability and prosperity of historically Black women career and entrepreneurial professionals. The organization offers business assistance to Black women throughout the Twin Cities. They focus on key areas of service ranging from wealth literacy, professional development, business technical assistance, and financial assistance. Every service area includes coaching, workshops, and classes. The goal of Black Wealth Women Alliance is to build an alliance of wealth among Black women that would transfer to their families, building generational wealth and the wealth in the broader community. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have the CEO of Black Wealth Alliance and a couple of other testifiers.
Ms. McKnight, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Good to hear you. Kendi McKnight Ahad, CEO and founder of the Black Women's Wealth Alliance.
Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I had some visuals, but I am happy to send it to the committee members and yourself afterwards if that's most helpful. But again, I'm the CEO, founder of the Black Women's Wealth Alliance, and greetings to you all, committee members and Chair Noor. I am here to speak in support of this bill and just to tell you a little bit about the lives that we're changing and the difference we're making in local communities. We've been around since 2014. Our services are 100% free to Black women. We actually serve Black women statewide, including in greater Minnesota, some of the areas of Rochester and St. Cloud and other Wilmington and other areas that Black women, and other areas that Black women are in. Our work is essential as we are the only Black women focused and led and owned institution that focuses on cultural wealth building. Again, we work with workers and business owners providing essential support that's needed. And in our direct wealth education, we work with Black women around taking control of their lives to create budgets and visions for themselves to build generational wealth. We help them with their skills, with their knowledge, and then we invest directly in their capacity to make it real for themselves. Some of the things we've done is helped over 1,000 Black businesses get started, over 700 businesses expand and continue their businesses going. We teach them how to become legalized with the state, how to develop financial systems, and we also invest in their ability to build wealth through home ownership. And for other women who work jobs to advance their careers by growing their knowledge and increasing positions and sustaining themselves at their jobs, how to look at their employee benefits packages. And as you may know, Black women, nearly 85% of us are the primary breadwinners of our household. So we carry a very heavy financial responsibility in Minnesota, and our children are greatly concentrated with the women. So the success of our women is essential to the success of our communities. And so that's why we focus on them and invest. And we need our women to be well, which translates to our communities. And we recently purchased a building also in North Minneapolis that will serve as an incubator space for Black women entrepreneurs to grow their prosperities. And having a cultural institution like ours is essential. While we are part of a larger ecosystem of business support agencies and women-owned agencies that support Black women, it's important that our cultural space also is upheld because we can affect change differently in our community. So I think that's really all I have to say. I hope that, we can get your support for this. We've already invested over $2 million worth of small capacity grants into Black women, and we're continuing to do more. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Ms. McKnight-Ahad. The next person on the list is Ms. Jones. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed. Oh, you can go. Yes. Sorry about that. We're doing a hybrid, so.
Thank you all.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Chair Noor and committee members. My name is Tamika Jones. I am the founder and CEO of Lip Esteem, which is a plant-based, gluten- and cruelty-free lipstick line that I developed during the midst of COVID and civil unrest. I decided to, because I was furloughed and I was so confused sitting at home, I decided to take my savings because I was making twice as much being furloughed than I was actually working. I mean, I've got a trade from St. Paul College, my bachelor's is from Metro State, but I still wasn't making enough money to survive. So because of my unemployment benefits, I took those monies and I put them into my brand. Therefore, I didn't need to use unemployment anymore, which is very rewarding for me. Soon after, I was taking cohorts to learn about entrepreneurship because although I knew business, I didn't understand entrepreneurship. In the midst of that, I was asked to be on a Hulu television series called The Small Business Revolution, which came to Minnesota and highlighted six Black businesses. So Lip Esteem is one of those businesses on there. Soon after, I was able to hire my daughter, who became the director of operations for Lip Esteem, which is creating generational wealth. And that is exactly what I wanted to do with my business. It was not easy because I was bootstrapping the whole time. What ended up happening is I met Ms. Kenya McKnight from the Black Women's Wealth Alliance, and during a time where I didn't have enough to provide products or to be able to ship out products, they actually gave me a grant to help me get through the next phase in life. And through that, I was able to double revenue. And they continue to reach out to me and ask me, Tamika, what do you need? And Ms. Kenya always says that the nation grows no higher than its woman. And I believe that is a true fact. And I want to be able to continue to create, help them to create revenue and help us to build, to come out of poverty. Because at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do as a Black women. But also, there's so many of our businesses that are for all women. And that's what we need to get back to, is coming together for all women. The Black Women's Wealth Alliance supported me with grants. It's created to help build generational wealth and remove the barriers of capital, because it is very difficult to receive capital as a small business. And I think that's all, but I do appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Jones. I think you summed it very well. You can sit there, because there may be questions coming from the members. You know, you talked about not only survive, but to thrive. It's something that we hear. And then building wealth, it's something that has been resonated with us for quite a while. And access to capital. I want members to be paying attention to those issues. The next person I have is Mark online. Please welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself on the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Iolanda Evans Mack. I'm a homeowner and a business owner in North Minneapolis. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Black Family Blueprint, which develops parenting and couples education curriculum specifically for Black families from a family science perspective. I come from a sharecropping family that migrated to Minnesota from North Carolina in the 1960s. I honestly come from welfare and public housing. My grandmother is a skilled seamstress who made beautiful garments for our family when she wasn't working a back-breaking job doing commercial laundry in North Minneapolis. And as a single mother of three children, she couldn't disrupt her family's stability to venture into business ownership. She didn't have the confidence, she didn't have the community support or the financial stability to even try. And so access to a culturally specific business development opportunity would have made the world of difference in the trajectory of my family. Now, my mother, she's a talented hairdresser. She braided hair to make ends meet. She had a consistent clientele for years and would do hair in the middle of the floor in our home. She wanted her own shop so bad, but she had no idea how to get started. She had no money to fully explore the idea. And so again, here, access to something like the Black Women's Wealth Alliance would have made a whole world of difference in the trajectory of our family's capacity to build wealth. So both my mother and my grandmother, they instilled within me a work ethic and passed along the ability to hustle, to provide a legit service to my community, to make ends meet. But I had no idea about business management. I didn't know anything about accounting or taxes or insurance or investing. I didn't know. I just knew how to work, but I didn't know how to build an infrastructure around my business. And so it wasn't until I went through Black Women's Wealth Alliance's Wealth Academy that I gained the confidence to build and strengthen my business. I saw myself reflected in the content and within the leadership. They spoke my language. They addressed our historic traumatic relationship with credit in this country and with Black business ownership in this country. The Wealth Academy opened up this whole world of Black female business ownership that I didn't even know existed. And they created access to education and resources and tools that emerging and struggling business owners such as myself needed to thrive and really for us to compete in our respective markets. And because of this type of model of business support that Ms. Kenya McKnight envisioned, my business is financially thriving, but I need more, and we need more. We are lifting our families out of poverty. We're wives, we're mothers, we're caregivers, we're descendants of enslaved people in this country with a mission to build wealth for ourselves and for our future generations. As Black women, we're among the fastest growing entrepreneurs in this country. And this bill will provide us with the access to the education and those tools and resources and social capital that's required for us to build a legacy of wealth and health, which is a direct solution to mediating the disparities that we experience across our Black communities. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Mack, for your testimony. The next person is Ms. Perez. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Knorr and Lead Hamilton. My name is Gloria Perez, and I'm the President and CEO of the Women's Foundation of Minnesota. And thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of House File 4098. And thank you to Representative Moran for authoring this bill. For 39 years, the Women's Foundation has invested more than $32 million in community investments across the state and advanced policy to create a state where women, girls, and families thrive. Our commitment to systems-level change that centers communities extends from our historic investments in the Minnesota Girls Are Not For Sale program to the Young Women's Initiative of Minnesota. And they continue today in our investments in research and policy change. With the Center on Women, Gender, and Public Policy at the Humphrey School, the Women's Foundation produces the state's leading research on the well-being of women and girls every 2 years. And we just released our 2022 Status of Women and Girls research this month. A copy is actually being delivered to your offices. The research shows that the wage gap continues to shortchange all women and affects Latina, Black, Indigenous women the most. On average, Minnesota women make 81 cents for every dollar that men make, with significantly lower amounts among women depending on race and ethnicity. Closing the pay gap for Black, Latina, Indigenous, and Somali women who make the least has to be a priority if we are to help families succeed across Minnesota. There's also a significant gap between men and women when it comes to business ownership, an important pathway to economic security and wealth building. Of over 375 firms in Minnesota, only 32% are owned by women. And of those, only 5% are owned by women of color. That's why since 2018, the Women's Foundation has invested directly in young women entrepreneurs with an innovator program. Our innovators aged 16 to 24 receive microgrants of $2,500 to implement their ideas and scale their innovation. To strengthen their development, they also participate in supportive cohort-based learning and individual leadership coaching. And since the inception of the program at the Women's Foundation, we have made 105 grants, totaling $262,500 to 83 innovators. One innovator is Helal Ibrahim, who in 2018 used her innovator grant to source materials and create handmade hijabs and henna by and for Muslim women. In 2019, Park Nicollet Methodist Hospital approached Helal to introduce a new product line of henna and hijabs to their gift shop. By partnering with Helal, the hospital took an important step in inclusivity that no other U.S. healthcare organization had taken before. And during COVID-19, in the pandemic, henna and hijabs donated over 800 hijabs to frontline medical workers in Minnesota through a grant investment from the Women's Foundation's COVID-19 Response Fund for Women and Girls. Helal continues to scale her business. In the summer of 2021, henna and hijabs collaborated with Nordstrom's for a first-of-its-kind partnership to bring high-quality, fashionable hijabs and headscarves to Nordstrom. This is just one success story of what happens when we invest in women and their capacity to build their own financial futures. The data from our report and community voices that we center demonstrate that the essential building blocks of economic security and wealth building consistently shortchange our Black, Indigenous, Latina, immigrant, and other women of color. So we cannot stand by and pretend that we are powerless. The bill before the committee will provide important investments in Black women's financial capacity and empowerment, and investing in women's benefits, children, families, and communities. Thank you for the opportunity to provide this testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Perez, for your testimony. Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it okay to ask questions?
Yes.
All right.
Discussion.
My question is the in-person testifier, and my sincere apologies, I didn't catch your name.
Tamika Jones.
Ms. Jones.
Yeah.
You talked about a plant-based product.
Yeah.
Are you Do you manufacture that here in the state of Minnesota? Are you able
Ms. Jones, go ahead.
Thank you. So I initially started doing it myself in my kitchen, which was a hot mess. And so what happened was I did have to outsource that. And so they are in Florida, but they could take my ingredients.
Well, thank you. This is exciting. I like hearing these stories. And I'm wondering if it's plant-based, if AURI or some of the Minnesota-affiliated research labs and institutes could help you out so that you could manufacture that here in Minnesota. Just a thought, Mr. Chairman.
I would love to be introduced to them.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll make the introduction.
Representative Haley.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Moran, for your bill. I, too, appreciate hearing the stories of all these women entrepreneurs. And so I had a couple questions. I'll start with Tamika Jones, if I can. Was any part of your business, were you part of Launch Minnesota? I feel like I've heard your story before.
Ms. Jones, you're sitting on the hot seat there. Go ahead. No pressure.
I just received the City of St. Paul Small Business of the Year Award, so maybe that is why. But I am involved in many things in this year and a half. Things have really escalated in a beautiful way.
Representative Haley, I think you've seen also in the business revolution, and then there was a book that was given, and I think you've seen the videos online, and Chair Moran also shared that as part of the interviews that were done on Rondo and so many other places. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me where we can procure your products here in Minnesota? Do you sell online or are you in stores?
Yes, I do sell. E-commerce is one of the ways, but my new storefront is opening on Selby and Victoria in the Rondo neighborhood. Thank you, Makia Griffith, for all your help. But 876 Selby, which is two doors down from Jay Selby's, the vegan restaurant.
Representative Haley.
Thank you. Thank you. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
I do also have a question for the CEO of the organization, and I'm sorry.
McKnight-Ahad. So.
Okay. Is she still available for a question?
Yes.
Okay.
I am here.
Thank you. I'm wondering, of the $2.5 million in the bill, what is your total operating budget right now?
Ms. McKnight-Ahad?
$3.2 million is our total. Well, if we include our fund, it is $4.7 million. We have the cultural wealth education, business support service. Our financial assistance is called the Asset Wealth Fund.
Representative Hill.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Did I hear somebody say he wants to talk? Seeing none, your closing remarks, Chair Moran.
Well, Chair Noor, I am excited. I am excited leaving out of here. So the Black Women Wealth Alliance is cultivating strategies, creating wealth, and changing lives. If we're going to be intentional about reducing economic and race disparities in Minnesota, this is how we start. Being intentional with state investment with those impacted disproportionately by system is the way to go. The goal of Black Wealth Alliance is to build an alliance of wealth among Black women that was transferred to their families, building generational wealth and wealth in the broader community. Let's begin to tackle this, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Moran. With that, I renew my motion, House File 4098, be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much, Ms. Jones. The next bill we have is House File 2175. Chair Lee, welcome to the committee. And okay, so House File 2175 will be laid over for possible inclusion. To your bill, I see you have got a DE1, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair of the Committee. Yes, I have the DE1 amendment. The amendment changed the requested amount from $2 million to $5 million and provides more detail about the project information.
I will move the DE1. Members, any discussion on the DE1? This puts the bill in a shape that the author wants. Any discussion? See none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? See none. The amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 2175 as amended. Pillsbury United Community is a 140-year-old organization in my district that co-creates enduring change towards a just society. Justice-built communities is a project of Pillsbury United Communities and is an innovative community development corporation that leverages land, labor, entrepreneurship, and capital to build equitable wealth. The project proposed in this bill is called the Sandbox, which will be a three-story, 20,000 square feet building in North Minneapolis and will bring together Black, Brown, and other community-based entrepreneurs, banking institutions, and venture capital firms under one roof for integrated, equitable financial technology industry innovation. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Adair Mosley, the Executive Director of Pillsbury United Communities.
Mr. Mosley, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Wonderful. Good afternoon, Adair Mosley, President and CEO of Pillsbury United Communities. Thank you, Representative Lee, for your leadership and commitment to building equitable communities, and Chair Noor and the committee members for the opportunity to address the committee this afternoon. Representative Lee indicated, we are a 140-year-old community impact organization building towards this just and equitable society. Justice-built Communities was launched following the murder of George Floyd and our way of building more equitable and prosperous communities. And we're starting in North Minneapolis through this Equitable Economic Development Corporation. Representative Greenman, you and I have been saying the same thing, and it is, we are all waiting to unleash the power of people, and we would also like to add place. And now is the moment to be able to seize that. Pillsbury United Communities is proposing to build FinTech at Entrepreneurial Hub in North Minneapolis. With an investment of $5 million from the state, Pillsbury will secure the remaining $11 million investment to open this hub by 2025. The site of this economic development project is a building that saw severe damage during the civil unrest. Minnesota is poised to produce more innovation in the financial tech services space, given our concentration of industry leaders from U.S. Bank, Securian Financial, Thrivent, Allianz, regional banks, and other sectors. With the right access for entrepreneurs and coupled with strategic investment, small business development can catalyze. Innovation can be born right here on our own backyard. While fintech may sound futuristic, it is already a part of our daily lives. Whether you sent a financial transaction to your college student using Zelle or purchased an online item and used a tool like Sezzle or Afterpay, or whether you've signed up for the Greenlight card, which is a tool for kids to learn financial literacy and savings, all of these are powered by the emergence of financial technology tools. Our hub could generate more innovation for the unbanked and the underbanked in our state, and frankly, that are affecting large parts of greater Minnesota as well. It could democratize investments. So let me paint the picture for you. Representative Baker, imagine entrepreneurs creating an insurance product that has better technology advancements, including AI innovations and algorithms that would individualize risk selection and pricing, and customers could select products based on a wider range of price points. Or Representative Noor, a building that gives tech developers access to a data sandbox where they can intersect database and information theory, software engineering, numerical analysis, and understanding how their product will interact in real-world environments. Representative Hamilton, we haven't quite figured out how to intersect pork. We are seeking to put this entrepreneurial hub that integrates financial institutions, entrepreneurs, and venture capitalists, as Representative Lee stated, all in the same location. Entrepreneurs can work on an innovative product, position their innovation to banks for seed funding, and ultimately pitch their products for Series A funding, all in North Minneapolis. Growth potential in the fintech space is incredible. 64% of early stage deals dominated the market in 2021. Of the roughly 5,000 deals that were done in 2021, we saw a 168% increase for a total funding of $131 billion. This is a sector that is booming. We will also at some point add a revolving loan fund that makes investments in the friends and family space for concepts and ideas, which is difficult for individuals to get funding, especially if you're black or brown. Companies like Sezzle, which is headquartered right here in our own backyard, have created over 300 jobs in the tech, marketing, and other spaces only since 2016. Or if we take UPSI, which is a warranty company for electronic devices, they roughly raised $18 million in Series A funding right here in our own backyard. And you all will be championing the first fully integrated hub of its kind in the state of Minnesota. So thank you for your interest and the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mosby. Members, discussion. Professor Juggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious about the site. The site is currently owned by the Pillsbury Group, and in that neighborhood, what are your expectations if this project goes through about revitalizing that neighborhood? What would that bring to that area, that community?
Yeah, Mosley.
Representative Juergens, correct? Yeah. This West Broadway, the particular corridor, and more broadly North Minneapolis, is seeing a lot of revitalization. So if you drive down the corridor, lots of cranes and things are getting built. We are a part of that ultimate goal. Pillsbury United Communities has been acquiring property that has either been dilapidated, no investment. And so our goal is to continue to put plans together for the properties that we own adjacent to this particular property. This is our launching pad, and hopefully will be the spur for other catalytic investments across the corridor. And we do know that whether it's bus rapid transit or light rail or some sort will go down West Broadway. And so it is also an opportunity to for institutions like ours to come in and shepherd that type of economic development.
Okay, thank you.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So did I catch that right? This project is shovel ready. It's ready to go and waiting for the funding.
Mr. Mosley.
Chair Noor, Representative Hamilton, yes. It is our goal upon approval of funding that we are putting, we've already bought the land, demo sort of the site. So this is a shovel ready project that will have all of you at a ribbon cutting.
Well, any discussion? Any further discussion, members? See none. I think, Chair Lee, you are the chair for the capital investment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for this consideration. Pillsbury has been doing a lot of great work, and just on the condition of West Broadway, really appreciate members on both sides of the aisles, you know, after the civil unrest, for showing up for my communities and really, you know, seeing what we can all do together to help out not just the corridor and West Broadway, but throughout the, you know, entire metro area and throughout the other corridors in the entire state, too. And so thank you for the concern, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Chair Lee, for bringing the bill forward. And I see no further discussion. I renew my motion. House File 2175, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much. The next bill we have is House File 2661. Representative Hollings.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Yes, that is my bill.
I'd like to move House File 2661 to be re-referred to Environment and Natural Resources. To your bill, Representative Hollings.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and thank you, committee members. House File 2661 would provide grants for investment in composting, electronic waste reuse, and recycling, reuse systems, and recycling market development. Currently, most of our trash is either buried or burned, and any of you in climate and energy or environment committees know that we have ongoing conversations about which method of disposal is better. And while we definitely need to have those conversations, we also need to move towards a new path of zero waste. So a large percentage of what we incinerate or put in landfills is recyclable or compostable. And if captured, those materials can support our local economy, create sustainable jobs, and curb climate change. On average, zero waste creates 10 times more job than landfills and incinerators, and that's per ton of material that's handled. Recycling creates an average of 10 times more jobs than trash. Composting creates at least twice as many jobs as landfills. And reuse creates as many as 30 times more jobs than landfills. In addition to the job creation, it also generates tax revenue. There have been a number of studies that have been done in different communities that show that the reuse and recycling systems actually generate a good amount of tax revenue for those locations. I have several testifiers that I want to use most of my time to allow them to speak on their experience, and so I will turn it over to them.
Davenport, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Sure. Good afternoon, Chair Noor and members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Hollins, for introducing House File 2661. My name is Kate Davenport. I'm the co-president of Eureka Recycling, and I'm here representing our team of 120 people who work on the front lines of real zero waste solutions every day. We are in strong support of House File 2661 that would create a grant program to support the development of zero waste infrastructure across the state. As a mission-based recycler serving Minnesotans and engaging in national and international zero waste work for over 20 years, we can speak confidently to the fact that investment in zero waste infrastructure are investments in a strong, resilient local economy, good green jobs, and more stable climate, a healthier environment, and more stable supply chains. This bill sets out an important prioritization to focus first on reuse and reduction. This could look like something as impactful as helping a rural school district purchase dishwashers and reusable dishes to move away from single-use disposables, or deconstruction instead of demolition, which supports reuse of building materials. The last 2 years, we have all experienced the challenges of global supply chains. Support for zero waste infrastructure can help to move forward reuse and recycling in order to help localize supply chains and lessen dependence on weakened global supply chains. This grant program also identifies market development as eligible for funding. While the materials we sort in our recycling facility are global commodities that can be sold to markets anywhere in the world, local end markets result in increased economic and environmental benefits from recycling programs. For example, we have a local market for our paper, the West Rock Mill in St. Paul. That paper is processed back into cereal boxes and are back on the shelf stores in 5 to 6 weeks. Supporting local jobs and strengthening regional supply chains. On the other hand, there are no local markets for plastic soda and water bottles. This grant program could aid in the development of a plastics recycler in the state of Minnesota. Finally, we're excited by the possibility of this program helping to expand composting infrastructure. Up to a third of our waste is compostable. Composting produces nutrient-rich soil amendments that are needed for both industrial agriculture and urban food security. What a better place to produce these important products than right here at home. One more important component of this bill that we want to highlight is that it explicitly draws a bright line about what is and is not considered a zero-waste solution. More specifically, waste to energy or fuel, often referred to as advanced recycling or chemical recycling, are not in fact recycling and do not move us closer to zero waste. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you so much, Ms. Davenport. The next person on the list is Ms. Berger. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and members of the committee and Representative Hollins. My name is Emily Barker. I'm the Executive Director of Reuse Minnesota, and I'm here today in support of House File 2661. Reuse Minnesota is a nonprofit dedicated to supporting and advancing reuse in our state. Our membership includes small and large repair businesses, resale stores, and rental shops, as well as government entities, consultants, and individuals who support reuse. As we found in our 2020 impact report, Minnesota is home to more than 10,000 businesses that have reuse as their primary function or as a significant portion of their business. These businesses account for over 55,000 jobs, or approximately 1% of employment in the state. This bill would help provide funding to continue expanding the reuse sector. By the very nature of the work, reuse and repair create jobs. While some problems can be diagnosed by machine, most fixes require the hands of people. Reuse jobs are also less likely to be exported, and therefore reuse businesses grow the local economy by keeping spending in our communities and our state. Repair and reuse have proven critical in the last 2 years in particular,
as the international supply chains have become and been unpredictable. The demand for personal technology has increased with work from home and virtual learning, so refurbishing electronics and keeping them in use longer is critical for Minnesota businesses and learners. We strongly support Subdivision 5 market development, which would support reuse opportunities such as reusable to-go packaging for restaurants and other reusable packaging systems. Developing markets for refurbishing and repurposing goods that still have much life left in them creates jobs. It also decreases the cost to our local governments, entities which manage waste disposal. Instead of sending usable goods to the trash, we create opportunities for economic prosperity. In our study, we learned that reuse businesses generate around $5.8 billion in Minnesota each year. The funding in this bill is an important investment that will help grow and multiply that economic activity. In summary, reuse is good for Minnesota workforce and business development, and we encourage your support of this bill today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Becker, for your testimony. The next person is Ms. Amanda LaGrange. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Nora, and thank you, committee. My name is Amanda LaGrange, and I'm the CEO of TechDump here in St. Paul, Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to express our support for House File 2661. At TechDump, we give people, planet, and technology a fair chance. More specifically, we use electronics recycling and refurbishing as a work readiness training tool for adults with a history of incarceration or addiction, while also selling those refurbished electronics affordably in the community with 1-year warranty. For the last 10 years, we've seen how recycling and reusing creates jobs. We presently have 85 full-time employees, and we've processed over 35 million pounds of electronics. And if you need a visual of that, think of an Eiffel Tower with an African elephant on top. So we've seen a lot of electronics. We are just one of thousands of examples of organizations reducing waste while also creating jobs, good jobs. And I'm especially encouraged to see the subdivision focused on electronic waste. Electronic waste, often called e-waste, is the fastest growing waste stream in the world. And these last 2 years of pandemic life have only increased that amount, as evidenced by our hybrid meeting today. In these critical moments of supply chain challenges and climate chaos, zero waste businesses are not only necessary, but they're providing an amazing solution right here in Minnesota. We encourage the committee to act favorably on this effort, and we thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you so much for your testimony. The next person is Mr. Reed. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed. Do we have Mr. Michael Reed online? Are you able to unmute and proceed?
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Michael Reed, for the record, my name is Michael Reed, and I work for Ramsey County in the Public Health Environmental Health Division. Today, I'm testifying on behalf of the Partnership on Waste and Energy. I am also testifying on behalf of the Solid Waste Administrators Association. The partnership is a joint powers board comprised of Ramsey, Washington, and Hennepin counties. Through the partnership, our three counties work together to end waste and extend the life of our limited resources. The partnership and the Solid Waste Administrators Association supports the goal of Representative Holland's bill, House File 2661. The grant program in the bill will help the state shift toward a circular economy. A circular economy designs waste and pollution out of our economic activities and keeps materials in use, serving the economy instead of ending up in a disposal facility or landfill. We support programs and funding like what is being proposed in the bill by focusing on keeping waste electronics, recyclable materials, reusable goods, and organics like food scraps out of our waste stream. An example of successful electronics reuse in Ramsey County is PCs for People and Tech Dump. These nonprofit organizations receive computer equipment which is no longer meeting the needs of businesses, and they turn around and provide refurbished computers to low-income residents at no or low cost. This activity provides tools for economic and educational opportunities that may otherwise not be available to some in our community. Another example of an opportunity to create value for our economy is in the recycling market development. Even with our robust recycling programs in place, more than $50 million of potential value from recyclable materials is lost to the waste stream each year from our three counties alone. Recycling and reuse programs do have significant costs, and we'd like to do more to get us closer to a circular economy. The grant program in House File 2661 would be one tool to invest in activities that keep materials in use longer, keep waste out of landfills, and provide economic opportunities that our communities are now missing. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to these issues and express support for House File 2661. I stand ready to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Reed, for your testimony. Members, we have got a bill that is talking about trash today. I see Lead Hamilton. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hollins, my concern's not so much with the program itself. It's with the deed managing the program that historically, I believe, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has managed these projects. The solid waste tax that is collected, there's $28 million that goes into the general fund and $66 million into the environmental fund, and then about $25 million of that is used for recycling programs. And again, I'm pretty sure that it is being managed and administered by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency versus DEED. So I believe we're voting on this and having it go out of this committee. So I guess help me understand why we would be asking DEED to start a program and manage a program versus having the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, if you could, please.
Lead Hamilton, as I understand, this is a grant that goes through DEED.
Right.
So Representative Hollins, do you have any response?
I do.
Go ahead.
I do, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hamilton. That is a fantastic question. So when we started this process last year, last session, we spoke to some folks at DEED, and they were really enthusiastic about this project. I spoke to them again, and so we drafted the language in that way because they were excited about the job creation aspect of it. However, I did speak to them earlier this week, and they, much like you, what you just said, they said, we don't have anybody who specializes in this here necessarily, and so so we've been connected with the Pollution Control Agency to talk with them about how to move this forward. And so we are still in communication with them. I don't think this is the end of that communication, and recognizing that I think exactly what you identified, that this is something that needs to be touched on.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hollins, thank you for reaching out to not only DEED, but the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Since we're being asked to vote on this bill today, I want you to know that I'm going to be voting no on this bill because of how it's set up, asking for DEED to administer this. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much, Lead Hamilton. Members, any discussion? It's a new environment that we're in. So, Lead Hamilton, I think if there's no any further discussion, because majority of the members here will do the normal process of the voice vote, unless you want a roll call.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I'm okay with voice call.
Closing remarks, Representative Hollins, please.
Sorry, just trying to find my unmute button. Thank you, Chair Noor, and thank you, committee members, for hearing this. I really do believe that investing in landfills and incinerators right now is a dead end, and this is the new path that we absolutely have to be taking. As all of our testifiers talked about, moving towards being more independent in our needs and also creating the jobs that we need within the state of Minnesota. So I really hope that we can be a leader in this, and I thank you for your support.
Thank you so much, Representative Hollins. I renew my motion, House File 2661, be re-referred to Environment Natural Resources. With that, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Abstention? Seeing none, the motion prevails. You are on your way to Environment and Natural Resources. The next bill that we have is House File 3985. Vice Chair Christensen, welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill to the committee and proceed.
Thank you.
you, Chair Noor, and members of the committee. I'm pleased today to present House File 3985, which would provide additional funding and a couple programmatic enhancements to the Community Energy Transition Grant Program. That's a mouthful. The grant program was created in 2020 to support communities that will face the dramatic impacts of the retirement of some of the state's largest investor-owned power plants. This includes the city of Oak Park Heights, which is in my district, where Xcel's Allen S. King coal plant is now slated for retirement in 2028, which is more than a decade sooner than previously expected. This is a bipartisan bill. It's carried by Senator Matthews in the Senate, and I thank Representative Haley for signing on to the bill. I'll leave my remarks at that because I have a few testifiers, actually two testifiers today, Mr. Chair, to provide comments on the impact of these grants and why continued support is needed for the communities that are working hard to develop some kind of future for their cities.
Thank you for that introduction. I move House File 3985 be referred to Climate and Energy, and I see you have an A1 amendment.
Yes, I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
I move the A1 amendment. Discussions? See none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? See none. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, you have already introduced to us. We'll go to the testifiers. I see Mr. Shane Zatt right here. So please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon, Chair Noor and members of the committee. My name is Shane Zart with Flaherty and Hood, and today I'm here representing the Coalition of Utility Cities. And a quick FYI, the mayor of Oak Park Heights, Mary McComber, was hoping to join us remotely. She has been in communication with me and Representative Christensen that she's having some technical computer issues on her end and may not be able to. So we will, if it's okay with you, we'll submit her testimony in writing after the committee hearing as well. So. But I'm pleased to be here in support of House File 3985. The Coalition of Utility Cities that we work with is made up of cities like Oak Park Heights, but also Becker, Cohasset, Granite Falls, Hoyt Lakes, Monticello, Red Wing, and Representative Haley's district. And what each of those communities have in common is that each of them hosts a large investor-owned power plant. Coal, nuclear, each of those plants have a significant impact on the local economy, local tax base, contribute significantly to the workforce and tax base in each of those communities. But as our energy landscape changes, each of those communities in the next 20 years is either scheduled or will be considered for retirement of those plants, which will have deep impacts on those communities as they transition towards the closure of those facilities. So this program has been one tool in the state's toolbox to help support these communities. We've been pleased with the progress that this program made so far through its first round of grants after being created in 2020 by the legislature, and with the increasing support that the state has been providing through other efforts, such as the Energy Transition Office that will be housed at Deed, and we're excited to see that work get up and running soon here. But this bill would provide for an additional round of funding for additional grants to those communities as they continue to look at the next phases of that transition. The previous appropriation for the first round of grants was $2 million, actually from the Renewable Development Account. And through the Energy Committee. So there's fantastic work being done under that first round of grants. As you see in the bill, this would put $5 million for an additional grant round, this time through the general fund. And we do want to highlight that general fund dollars in this case, that's not an accident to be seeking those. And one of the reasons for that is because the Renewable Development Account dollars, because those are derived from XL ratepayers, are often limited to being used in XL service territory, where communities like Cohasset, Hoyt Lakes, Fergus Falls might be seeing similar impacts in the near future, and we'd want them eligible for some of these grants as well. Before I'll turn it over to our remaining testifier from the city of Becker, I want to note some of the programmatic changes that Representative Christensen mentioned. very briefly. One is that Section 1 expands the definition of eligible community by adding a reference to plant with the end of its license within the next 15 years. That, in this case, is specifically targeted at the communities around the Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant to clarify that they should be eligible for some of these long-range planning grants. The other section, Section 2, would change this program from one that requires a competitive grant process to one that allows DEED to offer grants on a rolling basis to communities. Now, this is a change kind of coming from our experience and the community's experience from the first round of grants, and knowing that there's kind of a finite, limited number of communities here that we feel will streamline the program, allow DEED and the communities to work collaboratively together and dole out these grants as the need comes. And a close analogy to how we envision this working that this committee will be familiar with is the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Program. That's where grants are offered on a rolling basis. So I want to leave it there and leave time for Marie Flipson from the City of Becker and for your questions, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Ms. Flipson, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and members of the committee. My name is Marie Fisher, and I'm
the Ms. Flipson, can you get close to the mic on the computer? Sorry about that. We can't hear you well.
Yes, sir?
We were not able to hear you. Go ahead.
My name is Marie Flipson. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Becker, which is a coal plant host community. We greatly appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3985 this afternoon, and we are thankful to Representative Christensen for carrying this important legislation. This bill will appropriate $5 million in fiscal year 2023 to an existing community energy transition grant program. We, along with several other host communities across Minnesota, are facing major energy plant closures, either in the near or distant future, with significant loss of local property tax revenue and the high-paying jobs. For Becker specifically, we are at risk of losing approximately 75% of our tax base and the high-paying jobs of roughly 300. Our community, along with others, are focused on the planning, design, and subsequent infrastructure and program work needed to mitigate these negative impacts. When this program was created in 2020, it was accompanied with a $2 million appropriation for community grants. The City of Becker was a recipient of one of those grants in the amount of $455,000 for sewer and water infrastructure improvement design and plans that will help to grow the Becker Business Park to attract business growth to help mitigate the effects of the Sherco power plant closure. We are extremely grateful for that award and even more grateful that the committee's consideration of the continuation of this program, including today's amendment that extends the deadline of the 2020 appropriation. The $450,000 that we received has been extremely impactful in our engineering and design efforts for the new infrastructure to support business expansion and attraction goals that really are cornerstone to our transition plans. The 2020 award helped us kick off a large design undertaking that has been incredibly impactful to our community. And the additional time through the proposed amendment today is very beneficial for us to ensure we don't run into the statutory deadline due to some unforeseen delays on our end. Although we were successful in the first grant round, our efforts do not end there. Our economic transition is very complex, it is hefty, and it is definitely ongoing. So additional resources are definitely needed to keep this momentum and transition going. The list of energy plant communities in Minnesota is very small. We support eliminating the competitive grant process for so few of us eligible communities exist. I feel it's the state's interest to support each of these communities in their ongoing economic development and transition efforts. In closing, Chair Noor and members, I want to thank you for partnering with not only the City of Becker, but all of the communities affected by similar plant closures as we navigate through the complexities of redesigning our communities and furthering these important economic development efforts. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today. If there's any questions, I would be happy to provide answers or supply more information. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Ms. Flipson, for your testimony. Members, any discussion? Representative Harry.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Thank you, Representative Christensen, for bringing the bill forward. And I appreciate the amendment that would allow the community of Red Wing to potentially participate, because our two nuclear generating plants would potentially be up for decommissioning in 2033 and 2034. So thank you for the amendment. I also really support the changing the competitive grant process. As you've already mentioned in the testifier as well, It's a better process to do it as you have it now worded, where DEED would manage that on an ongoing kind of a rolling basis. This is important, as folks have said, for multiple communities across our state as they look to transition from these power plants and coal plants, et cetera, and find new opportunities for employment. I know Xcel in my community is our one of our largest property tax payers and one of our largest employers. So any potential closure down the road would have significant impact to the economy in the Red Wing area. So thank you again, Representative Christensen, and to other members. Ask for your support on the bill.
Any further discussions, members? Just have a quick question. I know we do have the Energy Transition Fund, I'm trying to recall, but this funding is coming from the general fund. Mr. Zad, do you have any, how much is in that fund and why not go through that fund?
Sure. Well, Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. And to answer your question directly, I think you could fund it with either the renewable development account or general fund dollars. And the one major advantage of using general fund dollars is that those communities that happen to be outside of Xcel service territory then can participate in the program. But so we certainly support funding it through the general fund because we want all of the impacted communities to be eligible. If at the end of the day it ended up being just general fund or a combination of RDA and general fund, that would be fantastic. The only consequence when you fund it only through the RDA, however, is that folks like City of Cohasset, Itasca County, Fergus Falls, and those areas may not be able to participate in a grant round.
So the RDA account, how much balance do we have and how much do we collect into that account?
Oh, well, that would be a, Mr. Chair, thank you. I think I would defer to either Xcel Energy or the nonpartisan fiscal staff, maybe on the Energy Committee, though, however. So I'm going to say to be risky here, I'm going to answer I know, for example, the money that goes into that account, and Representative Haley knows this well, is at a rate that's tied to the number of nuclear storage casks at each of Prairie Island and Monticello. It is in the millions, I believe in the tens of millions each year. I'm seeing a head nod from our staff over here. I don't know the exact figure, so I don't want to step too far out on a limb. But if nonpartisan staff or anyone has a closer answer than I do. But really, I would say, just to reiterate, the reason that we ask for general fund or that we support that is not for lack of RDA funding. It's more just the additional flexibility and broader eligibility that the general fund would provide.
Ms. Eng, do you have any number?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The balance for 2023 is $45.4 million in the RDA.
All right, so we know how to slice the budget so that we can support those who are not in the Xcel Energy and those who are going to be excluded. Hopefully, when it goes to the climate and energy, they'll be making those decisions as we contemplate how we spend the resources. Any further discussion, members? Seeing none, Vice Chair Christensen, any quick closing remarks?
I'll be very brief. Just thank you so much for hearing this bill. Thanks for the support that I've had from it, and thank you for supporting the utility cities.
With that, members, I renew my motion. House File 3985 as amended be re-referred to Climate and Energy. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? See none. The motion prevails, and the bill is to Climate and Energy. Members, I think this went smooth, and maybe we'll come back next week on Monday. With no further items on the agenda, we now adjourn.